Blow the horn, let's go.
In everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's the sole place they play football.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama, you listen.
Keith fumbled and Alabama has recovered.
I told you what they were going to do.
Touchdown, Alabama.
It's 13 national championships.
Roll Tide!
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
Young and they can play it against you. And make his ass quit. That's our framework. That's our MO with the team.
Daniel Moore, get your canvas ready.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Tom, this Saturday we saw Alabama roll 48-7 over Kent State. What stood out? What caught your eye?
You know, the first thing that stood out to me in the game was the play of Dante Hightower and Courtney Upshaw and DeQuinn Menzie. And, you know, you even commented in the game that Menzie didn't look like he was a step quicker. He looked like he was two steps quicker. But the probably the biggest thing that jumped out to me was the speed of the defense.
Yeah, I think Courtney and Hightower both looked good. Menzie, I mean, he was amazing. I mean, he started at the cornerback, but then he played a lot at the star position. I mean, he was blitzing. He was flying through the air. He was putting his body in the middle of the fray. I mean, Menzie, he really showed himself. I was really impressed with his play. And then, you know, like we talked about last week, that, you know, the health of the defense, I think, really showed itself.
Well, I mean, for the first time, I mean, granted it was Kent State, and granted it's just one game, and maybe it's because Courtney Upshaw didn't get hurt in the first game like he did last year, but Courtney's wreaking havoc on one side, and Dante Hightower was finding his holes, and then like you said, DeQuan Menzie is coming in from the left side, you know, in the slot, and I remember one play where he even leaped over Dante Hightower or Mark Barron. And it's like, well, gosh, this guy doesn't care about, you know, this guy's Achilles is fine.
Yeah, he wasn't feeling it, right? He was a long way from the injury. I thought that was neat to see, and I think he's going to be a real difference maker on defense.
Let me ask you this. Do you think he's our best corner? Do you think it's possible that we could sit here 6 weeks from now or 7 weeks from now and say that he might? I mean, it's possible that, you know, his play, there are people
better
out there that
Trey.
Think he's our best corner. How could better he be our best corner than even a Dre possibly? And, you know, I think the possibility's there.
You know, we could come back 6 weeks from now and realize he's our best defensive back. And that would be an impressive comment, too, considering Lester and Barron on the field. I think that we're going to see him at full capacity. I think he has the potential, and it's just based on seeing him in this game, but I think he has the potential to really set the world on fire.
That would just be phenomenal to me, considering the hype with Dre and, you know, how high he's projected to go, that another guy on our team could possibly be the best corner. What stood out for you?
Oh, hang on. No, that's not a knock on Dre, though. That's just saying Menzie fully recovered. We kind of all have our mindset on how good he is based on last year, but, you know, you have to discount last year's or upgrade last year's performance because of the injury.
I'm not saying a knock on Dre. That's just a phenomenal. That'd be phenomenal if we look at the end of this year and if we say he was our best DB given the Lesters and the Barons and the Dres. And I'm just saying the way he flew around in that game, it's like, man, you know, is this what Saban was looking at, right, when he went after this guy to JUCO? That's all.
Well, if we're 6 or 8 weeks from now saying that he's the best DB on the field, and I think that there's a possibility of that, then holy shit, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let me ask you this. What's the first thing, you know, if I ask you what stood out for you, what's the first thing that jumps off the page for you from the game?
Well, from the game in general, I guess I have to go to the obvious and talk about the quarterbacks. And, you know, everyone was excited to see the difference between McCarron and Sims, even just how they would rotate, and then how they would perform. And so, you know, it was almost, and I hesitate to call it a quarterback competition, but what's intriguing to me is that sort of the comparison was over before it began. They were allotted three possessions, and they rotated three possessions. When McCarron comes out, it's 21-0. For all intents and purposes, the game's over. And then here's Sims coming out for his debut. And I thought he pressed, and he just didn't look as good as we all expected.
Well, now, we also, I think it's important for people listening, what we talked about, what we thought, you know, what the comments you made as far as what you thought you would see to start. You know, we even talked about, would Saban come out in a Wildcat? And would he come out with Blake Sims? Because just to be Saban, would he come out in somebody other than McCarron and Sims? It was funny he didn't do that.
Yeah, I mean, we kind of kidded that would be the case, but I mean, he did I guess what you'd say the opposite is, he came out with McCarron and he came out flinging the ball, and I think the first offensive play was a pass to DeAndre White, who's another guy that we talked about. But just in terms of the quarterbacks, they both ended up with two picks. They both ended up with a pick that touched a wide receiver's hands before it was picked off, and so you have a hard time blaming the quarterback for that. I think McCarron got a little too confident, and he tried to force a couple balls he shouldn't have. And
let's talk about that for a quick second. On the one you're talking about deflected, right? That was Michael Williams, and Saban gave him an earful coming off the sideline, and I think it had more to do with he had a hot read in the flat that he didn't go to. Instead, he tried to say, I can get more yards down the field. And you and I both know, if you're gonna thread the needle, your blocking tight end is not who you thread the needle to. It might be Marquise Mays, but not Michael Williams.
Yeah, and that's exactly right. And I think that, Coach is, getting in his ear about getting too greedy. The tight end streaking down the field, especially in that situation, you take the underneath pass where you're not throwing into double coverage and getting the ball, picked off. But I think McCarron got a little too confident, and I think Sims never got his confidence.
What did you think about his poise in the pocket as far as Sims goes?
Well, he was disappointing compared to what we saw in A-Day. That was his big asset in A-Day, and that was a liability during the game on Saturday. I thought you had a funny comment that, during the game that, hey, Phil, you're not wearing a black jersey. They can hit you.
Right. Well, remember that
one play? He just seems so lackadaisical.
Yeah, remember that one play where the guy came barreling in from like 10 yards for a clean shot? I mean, surely you would have thought he had to hear the guy coming. And he just leveled him in his back. And it's like, oh my gosh, I can't believe you didn't even anticipate. Whereas McCarron, I mean, he would step up and he'd still be looking downfield. Now, granted, he's played more collegiate games and this is Sims' first ball game, and I think he'll get better. But I was surprised that he didn't have any more pocket awareness than he did.
Well, if they had both performed, we came out of A-Day and I literally said, I don't care who wins a quarterback job because I'm confident we can win with either of them. I didn't see that on Saturday. And I think that, for the most part, I feel good about McCarron. I feel less good about Sims, but I'm going to give him a little bit of a pass because I think the game was over when he came in. I think he never found his rhythm. I think he was pressing because he had to come out and score 21 points on his first drive to make it look even. Now, I'll say this, though. I will say that Phil Sims, his mechanics – And they're not bad mechanics, but he just has a long windup. And I saw that him in the pocket when he would, take the ball and maneuver to throw, that he just had a long windup, and it was slow getting the ball out. I didn't see him throw anything that wasn't a rainbow. I didn't see his fastball. And he reminded me of, and I want to qualify this, he reminded me of Byron Leftwich. A big quarterback back there that can run but doesn't want to, has a long wind up and throws rainbows. Now, Byron Leftwich was, Hall of Fame caliber at the collegiate level. And he's a legend at Marshall. And so if he ends up being Byron Leftwich, I'm not going to be disappointed in that in any sense of the imagination. That's just the physical. That's just the tools that I saw. And whereas McCarron, I just saw him rifling the ball. Even he pulled the trigger sometimes when he shouldn't have, but he was rifling the ball.
That pass to Mays was pretty impressive. You know, when he did that slant route in the end zone, that was like throwing it on a rope. That was impressive.
A thing of beauty. And then Mays had made just a very subtle last minute adjustment, caught the ball with his hands. You know, didn't try to body catch it. Caught it out in front of him with his hands. That was a thing of beauty. That's a highlight reel right there.
Now let me ask you one other quick question. Do you think, you know, Saban talked on his coach's show, on his call-in show last Thursday night before the game. You know, he was highlighting that he has played two quarterbacks when he was at LSU. And that, you know, people want to make a controversy, but that, you know, if two quarterbacks are capable, that it's going to be an audition and he's going to let them, you know, decide it on the field. With what you saw at Kent State, do you think we see the same three series at Penn State? And when you and I go up there to watch this game, do you think Sim starts the first three series this time and then McCarron so that they equal out that stuff?
Yeah, I have a mixed thought on that. You know, it depends on how much he wants to game it. If you want to game it, then you do the 3-3 and then you flip who starts and all that.
Whole different opponent, though, and now you're playing at their place.
I think you're playing at a hostile territory on the road. It's a game opponent. I think you start with McCarron because I think that he's demonstrated, in the sample size that we have, that he's the starter. I think it's maybe a 3-1 or 3-2 rotation. I think rather than try to split the you can't split plays necessarily, but splitting possessions evenly. I don't think we try to split possessions evenly unless we get a lead in the first half, feel really good about it, and then play Sims more in the second half. That's the only reason. That's the only way they would end up, in my mind, with even possessions is if McCarron gets us out to a big lead and then we give Sims some playing time at the end.
Okay.
Now Sims could come out and learn from his experience because he has a lot of talent, and so he could learn from his experience and be a different guy on Saturday. That's why I give the quarterback sort of an incomplete grade. But if I had to act on what I've seen, you know, McCarron gets the nod, probably 2-1 possession this next game.
Well, something else I wanted to ask you about that kind of jumped out at me at the game. You and I kind of talked before about the offensive line, and we talked about what we thought would happen with Barrett Jones. Were you surprised that Cyrus came in the game so quickly?
No, I wasn't surprised that he came in, you know, quickly at all. You know, it was Kent State, and there's been a lot of buildup, and we wanted to get Cyrus a lot of snaps. I mean, Cyrus came in early, and he left late. When we were playing the full second team line, and even some of the third team line, Cyrus was still playing. It was the very end of the game that he was out. So I think that was all about giving him reps and giving him more time on the field. I was more surprised that Barrett Jones played three positions. I expected him to play two, but the fact that he got some reps at center, I was kind of surprised to see that.
Well, were you, we kind of thought that if Cyrus came in or when he came in that Barrett would get moved to left guard. You know, for some of those people that don't follow all the players as well, you know, what do you think about Warmack not moving over to right guard? I mean, there can't be a lot of difference between scheme of right guard and left guard. And, you know, for those people that don't remember, you know, Anthony Steen's going to have to do an awful lot for me to you know, before I think he's one of the top five guys on the line.
Yeah, some guys can play right-handed and left-handed, and some guys can't. I mean, in all the talk of shuffling the line and all the practices of shuffling the line, I know that we've given Warmack a shot at right, and he always ends up at left or on the bench if Barrett's there. You know, but think about Fluker. Never has he been mentioned as a left tackle since, you know, everyone was exasperated when he came in as a freshman thinking that he was going to be the next Andre. Clearly that wasn't the case. That never has been the case. But he's been a very solid and will go to the NFL as a right tackle. And so, Warmack could just be one of those guys that, you know, right-handed, left-handed, he can play one direction but not both.
So if that's the case, do we see maybe later in the year, do we see once we see Cyrus play more and therefore Barrett's kind of helping him at left guard, do you see the possibility later in the year of Cyrus at left tackle bringing Warmack back at guard because Cyrus is more comfortable, and then putting Steen on the bench for Barrett that you move back to right guard where he was last year, and that being our better starting five when we get into the meat of the schedule?
I think that is our best starting five. It just then becomes a function of, Cyrus next to Chance, and, does that work out? Or will, as we get into the meat of the schedule, we get into the meat of the SEC teams in the blitzes and superior talent. In that situation, do we need Barrett to continue on next to Cyrus? And I give even odds on that. We may see where Chance gets some more practice time at right guard, and maybe we do evolve into that change. But I was kind of surprised, and maybe I could have watched it a little more closely, but I was kind of surprised that Chance didn't get any opportunity at the right guard.
Yeah, because, I mean, if you're given reps, right? Yeah, why not give him a few reps?
I mean, if that's the objective, then, hell, he should start the North Texas game at right.
Well, it makes you wonder, because that was the opportunity to give him reps, so it does make you wonder. What else in the game was something that was of interest for you?
I think that, DeAndre White, had the first catch of the game. He only ended up with four catches, but he had a lot of targets. I think Mays was on fire. And I was kind of surprised to look up and see that he had 253 all-purpose yards. I mean, he had over 100 receiving, and he had, over 100, on special teams as well. And could have had more. He could have broken 300 if we didn't, sit him on special teams to get DeAndre some touches.
Why do you think they brought him in so early, though? Why do you think White is the guy that they brought in to do this the return, to do the punt return with who was it, Menzie on the kickoff return?
Yeah, he was back there with Melliner a couple times. I think we're looking for who the right player is, and I think we're looking for depth, at the kickoff and punt return. And I think DeAndre has an opportunity to really blossom into something back there. And so I wouldn't be surprised if May's got 75% of the opportunity and DeAndre, 25% of the opportunity. And then next year, DeAndre will have a lot of experience, and he'll clearly be the guy next year. It's sort of bringing him along.
I got you. Now, as you were talking about Mays, I am surprised he had eight catches. That is surprising, because you're like, well, gosh, where did those eight come from? Whereas I can remember DeAndre White being thrown to eight times, but I can't remember Mays. It was like a quiet eight catches, but
it was a very quiet eight catches, and then DeAndre had a very loud four catches, because I was surprised that his number was so low.
Now, when Saban talked in the post-game press conference about we need more explosive players on offense, my first comment was, well, damn, Coach, you got a bunch of them. You got Trent Richardson, and we hadn't even talked about Eddie Lacy yet, and Marquise Mays, etc. But then when I went back and looked at the stat sheet, I kind of love to do that. It was very disheartening. You got Marquise Mays with eight catches, and you got White with four. Well, then your next highest is Lacy with three, and then you got a bunch of ones on there. And you threw 37 pass attempts against Kent State. So out of 21 balls completed, man, your other wide receivers and tight ends, they only combined for four of the 21 catches.
Yeah, but what's really exciting when you think about that, if you look at Mays and DeAndre's numbers, and then the running backs are going to get some catches too. Saban's looking for that next explosive guy, and it ends up he's of the guys that were on the field. All of a sudden, instead of looking for that third receiver, he's really looking for the fifth receiver, because Darius Hanks is sitting out 2 weeks. And so he's going to be back in a couple of weeks. He's going to be one of our top receivers. And then Daron Carter, who's, I think he's going to is going to play and potentially start this next week against against Penn State. So when you take Mays, DeAndrew, Daron, and Darius, shoot, man, those are four loaded receivers.
Now as far as Daron Carter goes, you know, obviously he practiced a lot last week. Obviously he's got game experience in the college game. I mean, potentially he could be another big target. But what do you think about Lacy in the game that he had?
Oh, Lacy was incredible. I was very impressed with Eddie Lacy. He really looked dynamic. He looked the part. You know, we talked about Trent and Mark, and then there being potentially a drop off with Eddie. Eddie looked the part. He looked every bit as capable of standing next to Trent and running the ball with Trent. And his spin moves, man, that was exciting.
Well, he definitely did not look like he was concerned about fumbling the ball with that two spin move. As Eric, who sits next to us, made a comment that he had never seen him pull the double spin move on one carry.
No, I'd have to go back and look at that. I think he spun one way. I think he spun left, and then he spun right. So I think he went. I think he went both ways, which that's really impressive.
Did you notice on one of the runs that he even put his hand down on the ground? And I hope I'm not wrong here, but I think he picked that up from Mark Ingram. I mean, there was a couple times for the balance that he put his hand down and got like an extra 5 yards.
Yeah, he showed some good balance, and he looks really dynamic on his feet. Lacy's going to be fun to watch. I think he's really going to blossom into something. How about Big Jalison Fowler?
You know, Fowler, I think he's really found a home as far as a role goes, and you know, there really wasn't much. You know, there wasn't much in this game plan that we can break down in this podcast as far as analytical stuff like we like to do, because it was very vanilla. But, you know, when Fowler came out there at the end of the game and had his four carries in the fourth quarter, you know, you turned to me and you were like, you know, we were talking about not being fair. That's just not damn fair. And, you know, when you look on the stat sheet, man, four carries for 69 yards. I mean, that's the epitome of what you want your 250, 260-pound running back to do. As Coach Saban likes to say, take the air out of the ball, Fowler knows how to take the air out of the ball.
Well, it's even, you know, and it's even more impressive than that. He's not just a bowling ball that's going to, you know, that's going to get 5 yards at a clip. You know, it was unfair that he came in there as a 240, 250-pound running back in the fourth quarter when the Kent State defense is worn out and, you know, the game's decided. And then he runs for a 40, 50-yard touchdown. Makes a couple moves, hits the open field with some speed for a man that big. That's unfair.
But that's awesome. You would have to agree, right? You know, as we break down his moves a little bit here, you'd have to agree that some of what you're seeing you didn't see last year. I don't know if we can attribute that to coaching. I don't know if we can attribute that to working with him last season in the off season and the fall camp. But I think he was a little more bowling ball last year, and I think he's doing a little. He's got a little more vision now than he did last year.
Well, I think that, you know, his vision's probably the same. I think he's gone through a full season workouts in the fourth quarter program, and he's probably, you know, swapped some bad weight for good weight. You know, picked up half a step. You know, he doesn't have moves in the open field, but you know, he put a little shake on some guys, and then he's so big that, you know, he can just lower his shoulder and crush somebody.
No, that's true. That's true. The what do you think about all the freshmen? Were you kind of surprised at all the freshmen? Were you surprised at how many true freshmen we saw play?
I really was. I think we played seven true freshmen, and most of them we played on defense. And I think, you know, our defense is really highly ranked. Our defense is you know, considered one of the best in the country. And for us to play four or five or six freshmen on that defense, that's impressive. That speaks really highly of those individuals, the shape that they came in, their talent level, of course, but their maturity to come in, accept the challenge, come into Alabama. You know, people use our depth chart against us in recruiting, but that didn't seem to hurt. You know, Trey DePriest came in, you know, co-SEC player of the week, had 10 tackles, led the team. You know, he wasn't afraid of competition. And if you lined him up against the rest of the linebackers out there, you'd have a hard time guessing that he was a freshman.
What did you think about the play? We didn't get to see much from, you know, we didn't get to see a whole lot from Dix other than, you know, he's very fast. He seemed to be making up a lot of ground when he was primarily in zone coverage. I think one time he blitzed the quarterback and the ball was ran away from him and he pursued and kind of caught up and helped, you know, contribute on an assist. I was a little disappointed in I didn't see as much from Quentin Dial and Jesse Williams as I was hoping to see. I know it's one game, but I didn't see the splash that I was hoping to see.
See, I disagree. I saw Jesse and Quentin. I saw them both play with high motors. I saw Jesse especially have a lot of energy and excitement. And if I read the stats right, Quentin had two sacks. So
yeah, Quentin had one sack, which was his tackle for loss. So he basically had one solo, no assist. Jesse Williams had no tackles. And while I appreciate his high energy, we need a guy in the middle that can be disruptive, and I just didn't think he was disruptive.
Well, you know, Cody had never had a lot of sacks. We have a system that funnels the tackles to the linebackers, and so, you know, you have your defensive linemen that are absorbing blocks and getting some push, but we're funneling the tackles to the linebackers. And so I saw more, you know, energy from Jesse and Quentin than I did many of the other DLs. So
I just didn't, you know, I didn't see any of our internal DLs taking on double teams. And it, granted, it's just one game, but I guess and obviously they're not a Terrence
Well,
Cody.
Taking on or beating. I mean, there was a number of double teams. You know, they were double teaming some of them all game, but you know, no one burst through or split a double team to, you know, sack the quarterback right up the middle. But I think they both played well, and that's their first experience at this level of ball. That's a good showing. I'm impressed, and I think they're only going to get better.
What'd you think about Jarrell Harris, man, in that big highly used linebacker rotation?
Well, I think you called it last week, right? He was the starting Sam, and the starting Sam usually stands next to the coach. Because the reality is we played a lot of nickel.
I know, man, but I just, man, it just, I mean, you even commented on how sometimes he was trying to stay on the field, hoping that they'd let him, and I really hope good things for him this year. I really would like him to be a contributor, and I see he had one solo and one assist, and I don't know how much he got to play out there, but
He did not get many snaps, and I did watch him on a couple of snaps, and he was, you know, pointing at where he was going to go and pointing at someone else. You're going there, I'm going here, we're going to do all these things. And then when the ball snapped, he just kind of drifted back in coverage and just seemed lost. You know, and I just think, you know, that's just part of what we're going to get, you know, with Jarrell. You know, Alex Watkins ended up playing a lot more snaps than Jarrell, and I thought that was interesting. But, you know, the reality is, and we can call it whatever we want to, our base defense is not four linebackers. Our base defense is a nickel. We played the game almost exclusively in a nickel. And on third down, with the exception of one third down, we went into a dime on every third down. And we brought in Will Lowry as that sixth DB. And so you talk about HaHa only playing a little bit. I mean, he's way down in the rotation because we talk about our first six off the bench when we go three corners and three safeties is Will Lowry. You know, Phelan gets out there. You know, HaHa is going to see some play, but you know, Jarek saw some time, and Nick Perry. You know, there were others. We ended up playing a lot of DBs.
You know, as far as special teams goes, there was some good and some bad. You know, Jeremy Shelley, you know, obviously was consistent with the, you know, his 30-yard, you know, 30 within the 20 to 30 range, within the 20 to 30-yard line. You know, he hit both of his. I was a little disappointed that Cade Foster didn't make that, you know, field goal at the end of the first half that was 53 yards out. I mean, that was a great situation to be able to put that into a game, you know, in a non-pressure situation. We've run the two-minute offense. We've gotten field goal position, and then he misses the field goal. And, you know, do you think we're going to see this two – we talk about two quarterback controversy. Do we think we're going to see this two field goal kicker system all year?
Yeah, I think we'll probably see it, you know, the first half of the season like we did last year. You know, we'll just, you know, we talked about the short kicker being more accurate and the long kicker being less accurate, you know, and unless one of them sort of opens up what their capabilities are, we're going to see a mixed bag. But mixing that up on kicker is less intrusive to the flow of the game than it is quarterback. You know, a different voice in the huddle, you know, the ball spins different directions. We have a righty and a lefty. You know, those types of things. That's really invasive, if you will, to what we try to do on offense. A kicker, you know, one kick short, one kick's long. Have at it.
No, that's true. But if our shorter kicker's more consistent, hopefully we're driving the field, and hopefully Shelley's getting a lot more attempts this year than Foster. What else kind of stood out?
Hopefully they both have a chance to kick a lot of PATs.
No, that's true. You know, the other thing I want to mention on special teams, I'm sure you want to comment on, is with all the players we have and all the speed and the depth and just the physical presence that a lot of these kids are coming in with, you know, I have to say on one kickoff coverage, you know, number three is making the tackle, and my first inclination, you know, through the binoculars is to say, well, what the heck is Trent doing out there? Because this is the first time in 3 years that Trent Richardson has not been on kickoff coverage. And first of all, let me just say that I'm damn glad he's not on kickoff coverage. But then it was like, oh, no, that's Vinny. That's not Trent. So what do you think about DePriest and Vinny, you know, being able to make an impact on special teams when there's a lot of other guys that, you know, could fill those roles?
Well, I'm not surprised. Both of those guys are ball hawks. Both of those guys are headhunters. Both of them are athletic, and both of them will, you know, seem to be willing to do anything to contribute to the team. And so I was very pleased to see both of those guys. I had Vinny marked down as worthy of a comment. So I'm pleased with both of those guys. I didn't like seeing, you know, the likes of Eddie Lacy on coverage teams and kickoff teams. You know, our backup running back.
That's what we did last year with Trent, though. Do you think there's a theme there?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, I guess the best players, and we want experience out there, and all of that makes sense. I hope that as the season evolves, we can get him out of that role as he gets more carries.
No, it's funny that you say that, man. I wonder, I mean, because when Trent was on the unit for 2 years, he was the backup. And it's almost like Saban does want speed out there, right? And he does want some size and speed. If he had his way, he wants speed and size. And so, you know, Trent brought him that, and Lacy brings him that. That is interesting that he's a backup this year, and now he's the guy that supplanted Trent.
Yeah, I don't think it's a formula that says the backup running back
coverage
team. But they have characteristics of what a successful special teamer provides. And so
No, that's true.
It's more happenstance than anything else. But, you know, when you have guys that are in the one deep, clearly, but in that sort of one and a half deep, you know, your second running back, when you run as much as we do, isn't a second teamer. You know, he's just a one and a half teamer.
Right.
And so anyone that's sort of above that line probably doesn't need to be in special teams unless they're just the supreme, like Javi, returning punts. Okay, he's one of the best in the league doing that. I'll give that. But if it's one of 11 guys on a coverage unit, nah, we can find someone else.
I gotcha. Well, who do you want to give one of your mini game balls to?
Well, I'm going on defense. I'm going Daquan Menzie. I think that he's dynamic. I think he brings an element to the defense that we've lacked, because we've had very good defenses. But I think him at full strength, at full health, I think he does bring another dynamic to the defense. I think he does have the potential, and I want to be careful saying this, because we do have a lot of talent in the defensive backfield, but he has the talent and the capability to be one of the best out there.
No, that's fair. Mine has to go, we're probably, this has probably more to do with what they caught our eye due to coming off these injuries, but I've got to mention a dual game ball for Dante and Courtney.
So you're already giving multiples. You're already kind of breaking the rules, really?
I am breaking the rules, and these are obviously headline guys, but I could have easily said Daquan Menzie too. And, we could talk about guys like Trey DePriest and his 10 tackles, but what I think is going to be more important to this year's defense is the speed and the pursuit and these guys having an extra step. And so Hightower just looked like he just was flying around the ball and just felt so much better. So did Courtney Upshaw. I mean, dude, we had 8 tackles for loss. Granted, it was Kent State, but we were in the backfield the whole day. And it was just nice to see Dante Hightower and Courtney who were filling up the stat sheet.
Who gets your mini game ball on offense?
On offense, it probably has to be Eddie Lacy. I thought about DeAndre White. I thought about the splash that he made. But I think Eddie Lacy is more important to this team than DeAndre White. And that's because of the depth we have at wide receiver. And we do have, we do have Darius Hanks and Marquise Mays and these kind of guys. Well, losing Mark Ingram like we did, Eddie Lacy, I think, is a more important puzzle piece. I mean, the effectiveness of Trent Richardson this year has a lot to do with, can Eddie Lacy carry the ball 100 times this year and take off some load off Trent?
Yeah, that's fair. I give my mini game ball, and it's a big mini game ball.
Yeah, I knew you were going to do this.
I'm giving it to Justin Fowler.
No surprise.
Man, I love the big fullback types.
As soon as he scored that big touchdown, I knew that was exactly where that was going.
Hey, I'm going to tell you what he did, though. And you tell me if I'm crazy. Imagine you're a safety, or imagine you're a linebacker watching film, and you're studying. You know Trent. You know he's going to do what he's going to do. And, okay, Alabama's a running team, so they've got a good backup running back. But you're going to tell me that their third-string running back is a 250-pound, not a bruiser, but a 250-pound race car, and I got to go out and try to tackle that? I mean, think about it.
It is pretty impressive. It's been a long time at the University of Alabama but Lacy had a few breakaway runs last year as the third string guy, but not the size of Fowler. Lacy had some 50-yard touchdowns. He had a big run against, what was it, Michigan State in the bowl game. But Fowler, I didn't think we'd see Nimble Man score from 50 yards out. I definitely didn't expect that.
No, that's impressive, and I think that's something that other teams are, definitely going to have to keep in their back of their mind when he comes in.
So, what do you think this? What do you think about this next week? Alabama, we match up against Penn State in Happy Valley. I think we're both going to get to put a big tick mark on our football bucket list in doing a road trip to Happy Valley, and I know that we're both pleased that we're going to get to do that while Paterno is still the coach. But with all of the crappy uniforms that we saw this week in college football, and I want to probably put Georgia at the top of that list, and Maryland's probably not too far behind.
Yeah, especially with those helmets.
This is a classic uniform collision. with Penn State and Alabama. And I think for all the effort to try to create beautiful uniforms, we're going to see that with, I guess, we'll be in our road whites and they'll be in their blues. That's going to be an exciting game. And then, of course, the classic uniforms, I'm looking forward to seeing that as well. What's your prediction for this week?
You know, I think it's going to be a very close game. I don't think we're going to see a game like we did last year. I really think that I think we're going to struggle at quarterback. I think McCarron's going to get a little bit antsy in the moment. I think he's going to try to force some things. I think we're going to have to rely a lot on our defense and field position. I do think we're going to, you know, hopefully get some fumbles. I mean, I'm ready for this defense. We did great interception-wise last year, but I'm ready for this defense to force some fumbles. But I really think you're going to see like a 2010 ball game. I think it's going to be very close.
Wow. Well, we're definitely divergent of opinion here. I think that Daron Carter comes out. I think he adds an element to our offense that wasn't there. And I think that helps open up the running game. I do think we get some picks. I do think we maybe do get a fumble. I think again, the game is not as close as the score will indicate. But I see a 32-6 style game.
Oh, so you don't even think they're going to score a touchdown?
Well, you know, I'm saying six. That could easily be seven. But I see a good margin of victory here.
Okay.
20 plus points.
Well, I hope you're right, and I hope I'm wrong.
Well, that wouldn't be uncommon. Hey, with that, this is another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Thanks for listening, and roll tide.
Thank you for tuning in to the Alabama Football Podcast. For more, find us on Facebook under Alabama Football Podcast.
Aye.
Visit us on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com.
Aye.
Email at alabamafootballpodcast@gmail.com.
Aye.
And don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes.
Aye.
Blow the horn. Let's go.
In everything that we do every day, we want to be a champ.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's the someplace they play football.
Every team with an attitude.
Alabama, you listen.
He fumbled and Alabama has recovered.
I told you what they were going to do.
Touchdown, Alabama.
It's 13 national championships.
Roll Tide!
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
Dominate the guy you're playing against and make his ass quit. That's our framework. That's our M.O. with the team.
Daniel Moore, get your canvas ready.
All right.